Going out to our guest now, former judge Larry Glaser, who's also a former assistant attorney general, and now he can add author to that. Good evening, Larry. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, Cheryl?
Thanks for stepping in. This is when folks know that it's live radio. So I appreciate you being there. Ran into you the other day, and you were telling me about this book, so I was doing a little research on it. The name of the book is called Wounded Warrior, The Rise and Fall of Michigan Governor John Swainson. Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, because John Swainson had a very interesting and dramatic life story, and he's been almost completely forgotten, even though he served as governor and a Supreme Court justice in Michigan as recently as about 1975. He started at the age of 19. He enlisted in the Army and went to Europe as part of Patton's Third Army in World War II, and his legs were destroyed when he was out on patrol one night, and a Jeep, which was close to him, ran over a landmine, and the Jeep was loaded with ammunition. It exploded and destroyed his legs. And so he had to learn to walk on artificial limbs. And yet, 16 years later, he was elected governor of Michigan at the age of 35. He was the youngest governor of modern times in the state of Michigan.
And I thought I knew a lot about Governor Swainson, and I did not know about his injuries.
He took pains to appear just like anyone else. He never mentioned his handicap except in a very self-deprecating way in private among friends. And you're not alone. A lot of people, even at the time he was serving as governor, had no idea that he was walking on artificial legs.
And just for folks listening, when was he governor of the state of Michigan?
He was elected in 1960 in the same election that John F. Kennedy was elected president, and served one term, and then was defeated by George Romney, who was the father of Mitt Romney, who is currently well-known in the country and sought the Republican nomination last time and is probably going to seek it again this time.
Absolutely. That's just one of the many interesting bits of information about Governor Swainson. Something happened, though, in 1975.
Yes. He was serving on the Michigan Supreme Court. He had decided to come back into public life and was successfully elected to the court and was doing very well and enjoying it when he was accused of having accepted a bribe on the Supreme Court to reverse the conviction of a professional burglar named John Whalen from Detroit. And eventually he was indicted by a very aggressive federal prosecutor using a grand jury. He was indicted for the accusation of accepting a bribe and also for having allegedly lied to the grand jury. And he went to trial in federal court, and the jury found him not guilty of the bribe accusation, but they found him guilty of the perjury accusation. And so he was forced to resign from the Supreme Court, and he was also deprived of his law license for several years. So he descended into depression and alcohol, and it took him a while. It took him several years, but he finally kind of clawed his way out of that and returned to productive life, and eventually even got his law license back and practiced as an arbitrator and mediator, and eventually was rehabilitated by Governor Blanchard, whom I worked for, when Governor Blanchard in 1987 appointed him to the Michigan Historical Commission. By that time, John Swainson had become very interested in Michigan history and had done quite a bit of research on previous governors and Supreme Court justices. Now, I wanted to know, of course, which I think everybody would want to know, what happened. So I managed to interview a number of people who were alive at the time and are still available for interviews now. And I also got the 2,000-page transcript of his federal trial and went through that microscopically, you might say, to try to figure out how this happened and to try to draw some conclusions or let the reader draw some conclusions about whether he was actually guilty or not.
And you were able to get some find some new information, as you said, looking through the 2,000-page transcripts microscopically, there were some doubts raised about this conviction.
Many people doubted that he had actually been guilty. And he appealed, but eventually the Supreme Court refused to hear his appeal. However, I did find several people, three people, who had never testified at the trial, but were witnesses to really kind of the key events having to do with his perjury charge. And none of these people had spoken to the other people or knew the other people involved. They all independently told pretty much the same story. And that story was that he did not commit perjury.
Now, part of what you spoke about the gentleman named Whalen, and also part of the information is the indictment against Swainson was that he took bribes from a gentleman named Harvey Wish, who was a bail bond agent and a notorious fixer, was the quote, whose clients included this John Whalen. So part of your assertion is, if I understand correctly, is that Swainson didn't help himself with some of the folks he hung around with.
That's true. He didn't hang around with John Whalen, the burglar. He didn't even know him.
But Wish.
But he did befriend Harvey Wish. John Swainson, for an experienced politician, had a sort of a very strange blind spot. He was very naive about people. It never occurred to him that anyone would want to use him because he was governor or because he was on the Supreme Court. If people seemed nice, he was always willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, and he always tried to help people. He really had a hard time refusing anyone who asked him for help. And Harvey Wish asked him for help. There's no question about it. But the help was of a kind which was simply information that anyone could have gotten if they had, asked for the same information. There was nothing illegal about it. But Harvey Wish made John Whalen believe that he was actually going to use this friendship with a Supreme Court justice to get his conviction reversed if John Whalen paid him a certain amount of money, which he was then going to, pass on to the Supreme Court justice. But, of course, there's no evidence that he ever did pass it on. And, in fact, the IRS, as part of the investigation, did a thorough audit of John Swainson's income and expenditures, and they found nothing upon which they could base any charges.
And I did like the observation that you had that you just alluded to in some information I read. You said that most politicians who are elected to office develop a kind of a radar about who they should be careful about, but Swainson didn't seem to develop this.
No, he never did. I just can't explain it. There it is. I mean, everybody is made up of various characteristics that make up their personality and their being. Swainson was a very talented politician, a very intelligent man, and had a lot of energy. I mean, he had a lot of what it took to be successful, but he had this blind spot. He was very naive. Another manifestation of that was that when he was indicted by the grand jury on these federal charges, he purposely hired an attorney who had no criminal law experience because he didn't want people to think he had something to hide. And that proved to be a very costly decision for him.
Wow. We need to take a break here. Can you hang with us a little bit longer, sir?
Yes, I can.
Very good. We'll be back with Larry Glaser, author of Wounded Warrior, right after this.
Live in Lansing every afternoon with Cheryl Fritz. This is Fritz and Friends on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
And welcome back to Fritz and Friends. Cheryl Fritz here along with Scott Eckersley producing 1320 WILS and streaming live on 1320WILS.com. Back on the phone with Larry Glaser, former judge and assistant attorney general for the state of Michigan and an author of Wounded Warrior. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
Very good. When we left off, we were talking about the fact that former Governor Swainson did not hire a criminal attorney because he didn't want it to appear as though he had needed one and, in fact, had done something wrong. And right. as you said, that was another mistake.
Yes, it certainly certainly was. He hired a very fine civil trial attorney who had plenty of experience in cases involving suits for damages. But this was a case in which he was facing a very experienced and very aggressive federal prosecutor who was also very ambitious. I mean, he wanted John Swainson to be a notch on his belt. And so he had to have an attorney who understood all the nuances of criminal law and procedure. And unfortunately, his attorney did not have that experience. And I think where it really hurt him was that the attorney devoted a great deal of time during the trial to the charges of bribery. And I understand that's perfectly natural, and he did a great job. I mean, John was acquitted of that. But he kind of left the perjury charges as an afterthought and spent very little time fighting those charges. And I think that that really is one of the reasons why John Swainson was convicted of perjury, because the prosecutor presented quite a bit of evidence on that, and the Swainson defense never really explained or provided the jury with an alternative explanation to the prosecutor's explanation, which was that John Swainson had deliberately lied about forgetting certain conversations that he had had 2.5 years before the question was asked.
And to that point, sir, you talk about, in some information that I got a hold of, you talk about the fact that he went before the grand jury twice, once when he was questioned, as you said, first, and then he went back to make sure he got dates and meetings correct, and
yes.
came, and I'll let you explain that.
He was asked these questions, specific questions, about things that had happened several years beforehand. On such and such a specific date, did you have a conversation with Harvey Wish? Did you meet with Harvey Wish at such and such a place? Questions like that, very specific questions. And he had not really prepared. He didn't really know what was going to be asked. And so he said, I don't remember. He didn't really deny it. He just said, I'm not sure. I don't remember that happening. And then that night, he and his attorney and a bunch of other people got together and worked to go through his records, you know, his appointment books and so forth. And he finally realized that those things had happened. And there were several witnesses to that. And those are the people I interviewed. And they had nothing to gain by lying to me about this. I mean, things happened years and years ago, and I believed them. Anyway, the next day he asked to go back before the grand jury, and what I think he intended, or his lawyer intended, was that, you know, he would say, "Now I remember. Here's what happened," and he was hoping that by doing that he would get the benefit of a provision of the federal law which said if a person returns and corrects his testimony, then under certain circumstances that person will not be prosecuted for perjury. But Swainson's testimony to the grand jury on day number two wasn't quite that detailed. In fact, all he did was come back and read what was obviously a prepared statement saying, yes, now I acknowledge that those things happened. In other words, he was almost saying, well, you know, I may have lied, and now I'm telling the truth. And that was the worst possible thing that he could have done. And based on the witnesses that I talked to, he had not lied.
So it left room for interpretation.
Exactly.
When he came back and didn't explain what he had done to find those dates in those meetings, it left way too much room for interpretation.
Yes, and I should mention that after his initial denial to the grand jury that he remembered these things, other witnesses had come forward and testified that these things happened. So the prosecutor's interpretation was, well, now that you can't get out of it, now that we've produced witnesses who say they saw these things, now you're admitting it. So you must have been lying. And, of course, that's certainly one reasonable interpretation. But there's another reasonable interpretation, and that is that Swainson genuinely forgot these things and was reminded of them when the other witnesses testified. And I don't think he or his lawyer ever really made that point.
Well, it's a fascinating book. I just saw you to see it, so I haven't gotten a hold of it yet. I'm going to read it. And it's not so long ago that we won't remember some of the players in this book. I appreciate your time this evening. I look forward to reading this. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And you've obviously done your homework, which I appreciate.
Thank you so much. Larry Glazer, author of Wounded Warrior, The Rise and Fall of Michigan Governor John Swainson. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends after this.